You're listening to E-Commerce Fastlane, episode 31.
Welcome to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, launch, grow, and scale a wildly successful e-commerce company. Listen to real conversations with proven practical strategies and success stories. Learn how to generate more traffic, more sales, more profit, and customer lifetime value for your Shopify store. And now, your host and e-commerce entrepreneur, Steve Hutt.
Hey there, it's Steve, and welcome back to the E-Commerce Fastlane podcast. Now, if this is your first time listening, this is an e-commerce show where we have honest and transparent conversations about building and thriving online with your store powered by Shopify or Shopify Plus. Now, new episodes are available each week with your favorite podcast player through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. Or you can even sign up online at ecommercefastlane.com and be notified when new shows are being released. Now, on today's episode, I am chatting with Guillaume Racine, who is the, well, he originally was the co-founder, which I probably still is, and CEO of Return Magic, but he's now part of Shopify because of a recent acquisition, and it's a really important show, so please implement what you learned today, learning more about returns and that kind of user experience, and so I hope you enjoy the show. So let's jump in. So hi, Guillaume. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
I know we've been bouncing emails back and forth, syncing our calendars. It's a really busy time of the year, and it's been probably even busier for you knowing that this acquisition has happened with Shopify, which we'll definitely dig into in a few minutes. I have jotted a few questions down that I want to ask you today. But, you know, usually at the beginning, I like to ask more of a high-level question about the product. What problem does your solution solve for Shopify store owners?
Yeah, Steve, absolutely. Let me start really high level. So, you know, the return touch point is critical in terms of building long-term relationships with buyers. The way merchants approach returns and the kind of experience they offer to buyers has all sorts of ramifications on the conversion, loyalty, frequency metrics. In a world where Amazon and other large players are actually investing massively to differentiate in the post-sale convenience, you know, the question is, what can independent merchants do in order to be fully equipped to thrive, right? To offer hyper convenience, if you like, with buyers. So that's where we come in, really. The mission of Return Magic is pretty clear. It's to make returns magical for buyers and merchants. So what that means specifically, well, number one, we give merchants the tools to exceed buyer expectations. And secondly, we provide merchants with the right workflow for merchants to spend their time well. In practical terms, what we do is we make the management of returns super easy for merchants. You can automate, you know, the whole touch points with buyers, such as requesting, approving returns, sending a label, issuing a refund, restocking your items, and so on.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, that returns are kind of important for building kind of long-term relationships with buyers. I have to totally agree with that. I have many clients and merchants that are using the Return Magic solution, and it really is part of their technology stack as part of an overall brand and user experience. And we'll, I have some questions a little later on discussing this sort of thing and why people need to have a proper return authorization procedure. Maybe let's dig into and let's talk about how returns, how they can impact maybe the buyer and getting that kind of warm and fuzzy feeling of being able to want to purchase from a merchant if they in fact have a return policy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what, Steve? I think if you're up for it, we should do a little quiz. All right?
Okay,
are you good? I'll quiz you, ask you a couple questions, see how strong your returns game is actually. First question. What do you think is the percentage of buyers that actually expect free returns? Take a wild guess. I know it might not be easy to kind of come to an idea, but curious to know, you know, number percentage that pops up.
I would say probably in the range of 30 to 40% probably would expect a free return.
It's actually 80% of buyers that expect free returns, especially in the US where it seems to be table stakes.
Interesting.
Now let's contrast that. How many merchants, in terms of percentage, do you think actually offer free returns today?
Yeah, I think it's probably around the same number offering free returns. I'd say that, you know, in the 30% range.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
But there is quite a big gap, as you see, between what buyers expect and what merchants offer. So yeah, that's an interesting data point in terms of, you know, the expectations. As I mentioned, I think merchants may feel they're lacking the tools or the ability to really keep up with what buyers expect. So second question, what do you think is the percentage of buyers that will buy multiple items with the intention of returning at least one? For example, buying multiple sizes of the same clothing item.
Yeah, that's a good one. Because I know in footwear, I have quite a few footwear brands that I'm involved with, and I see that quite often. They'll buy the 10 and the 11. So I'm going to guess at 40%.
Oh, wow. You're spot on. Amazing. Yeah, that's around 40%. But that just goes to outline how prevalent returns are, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not surprising. And if I tell you that return rates for apparel retailers tend to be somewhere between 20 to 40%. So that's really kind of what we like to say about this is returns are the new normal. Right. They're really central to the buyer journey, right? People will only decide what they keep after they've had the chance to try the item. So thinking about returns as an aftermath of a transaction or thinking about returns as a sale gone wrong definitely does not apply today. Maybe it applied in the world of traditional retail, but that's not the case in online. Okay, and one last question. What's the percentage of buyers that you think will go on and buy again after they had a positive return experience?
I would think that, you know, if, and I'll just give an example. Let's say I buy a pair of pants online and I wear a 34, and it turns out the 34s were too small that actually meet a 35. And so if I return those or change my mind, I think if the procedure and the process was, and it's happened to me, and if the process and the flow of returning it and getting my money back and just the whole flow, just the experience of it, instead of just sending an email and it being caught up in a ticket, and you know, it can be quite ugly. I think probably the return experience, I would guess probably around 70%, 70, 80% would probably return if they had a positive experience.
It's over 90% actually.
Wow. Okay.
So you're right. Like if a merchant is willing to invest and make returns so simple and easy for buyers, buyers do recognize that. They appreciate it. And in a way, the return experience becomes a proxy for your overall customer NPS score.
I see. Yeah.
So that's another key message we've been drumming. I guess if we were to evangelize returns, you know, like returns are new normal now. They're central to the buyer journey. And they definitely do impact the customer metrics, whether it's conversion, loyalty, frequency. So it's very important to maybe understand how buyers think and what they expect. Mm-hmm. If you want to know more about this, actually, we have all sorts of data available for the 2018 BFCM guide on the Plus website, Shopify Plus website.
Yeah, I'll make sure in the show notes, I'll have links to this brand new guide that I think just came out yesterday, based on today's recording, but I'll make sure the link is there. And I've had a sneak peek through it. It's really exciting the amount of content that's put into that, you know, really take it to heart, learn from it. It's very clear that Shopify has done a lot of work in preparing this document and with a lot of partners and a lot of great history behind, you know, previous BFCM successes and failures for some folks. And the idea here now is let's follow some of the best practices. And so I'm great to see that you listed in there. So I was thinking more about now the product itself and kind of what are some of maybe your core principles that maybe have influenced return magic and just kind of the creation of it.
Sure. So we've been, you know, in this problem space for a few years now. You know, if I look at what rings true more than ever, I think like two guiding principles come to mind. The first one is that convenience is a moving line. So what's great in terms of convenience, in terms of experience today will be only average tomorrow. You know, the whole consumer landscape is evolving and I think consumers are becoming more and more empowered, which is great. But it leads to a necessity for merchants to keep reinventing themselves. So when we think about product, we don't just think about what's a great experience today. We try and really enable merchants with the right tools so that they're ready also for what's going to come their way in the future. The second key principle we've experienced with returns is that no size fits all. The needs of the merchant will vary based on their scale, like their GMV, for example, their operational complexity, how many countries they operate in, do they work with a fulfillment partner, and so on. And of course, buyer proposition. So within that, it's important to account for the variation in use cases and really thinking about the product in terms of layers. So that's something we've done with Return Magic, and definitely that's something we do within Shopify Returns, to really think about what are the needs of the, you know, the basic merchants all the way to the plus merchants, and making sure that they have the right tools to do what they need to do at their stage.
Let's talk about your journey a bit. I usually use this as a lead-in at the top of most shows, but this is kind of a unique show. I wanted to make sure that people that are listening had an opportunity to know that this is a really, really important topic. I really want you to talk maybe a little bit to the audience about your entrepreneurial journey. And if you can kind of maybe talk about the path to kind of leading up to launching Return Magic, and then maybe you can just touch briefly on the acquisition from Shopify.
Yeah, sure. If I'm trying to remember the first time I knew I wanted to start a business, I think I was probably 13. I was a scout, and we were going to those camps a couple times a year, and we had to sell calendars to kind of fund our camps. And it was hard work, you know, door-to-door selling is not an easy job. So I had an idea with a friend of mine to actually start building camping chairs that are foldable, light, and really easy to transport. And these are kind of chairs you can find at the kind of an outdoor equipment store.
Right.
So we built those ourselves, and we sold them for half the price. And we ended up funding the whole troops camps for the following years.
Oh, wow.
And with some excess funding. So,
awesome.
So I think from what I, well, you know, I walked away from this thinking, this is cool. I'd love to be an entrepreneur one day.
Right.
So let's fast forward many years. I think most recently, in terms of what's relevant that led me to start Return Magic, well, I worked at Amazon for a number of years in the UK, as well as at Yieldify, which is a software for conversion optimization backed by Google. That was my initiation to the world of commerce. I realized I love the space. I love merchants. I loved seeing entrepreneurs succeed in the space. But more importantly, I also noticed how key the return touch point was and how few solutions, good solutions there were for actually for merchants. That observation around the need versus what's available in terms of returns was also kind of a similar observation that my partner, Raf, co-founder at Return Magic, had as well. He was previously a founding CTO at Frank & Oak. So we were discussing together, and we thought, you know, we should build a solution that actually we want to use for ourselves. And that really set us on a path of, you know, validating the problem first. I think it's really important when you start a business not to jump to the answer right away, but try and understand really the problem space.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent a couple months and just trying to talk to as many merchants as possible. And the funny thing is actually every merchant, well, just about every merchant would take our meetings, right? So they experienced the pain. They were looking for a solution, and they had no idea what. So from that point on, we thought, okay, I think the problem is a real one. It's not a nice to have. It's a critical problem for merchants. So we built a prototype. We did a lot of selling the vision on the phone because we had nothing effectively, but we managed to get a few merchants just trust us, I guess, and take a chance on us. And that was the kind of the start. After that, we just had this feedback loop of launching new features, getting that feedback in, right? Doing the things that don't scale. That's from, I know it's a bit cliche, but it's really, really key, I think, especially at the early stages.
Right.
And then leading up to the acquisition by Shopify, well, really we launched as part of the Shopify Accelerator. We always kind of knew what Shopify was. Since basically 2010, 11, and we knew how great the company was. So initially part of the accelerator, then we had a partnership with Shopify Plus, which really helped us scale. And through these years, we met all sorts of amazing people within Shopify. So when the discussion came to, I guess, partner in an even closer way, meaning an acquisition, well, we were already kind of pre-sold. And at that point, we had those conversations with the leaders in the organization, and that sealed it for us. We knew from a value, from a vision point of view, we were totally compatible.
I see. That's a really good story. Thanks for sharing that. I know sometimes it can be a little bit personal talking about kind of the entrepreneurial journey kind of leading up, but then, you know, it seems that you're likely now with your people. meaning that, you know, you've always see some benefit in partnering up, being part of the partner ecosystem with Return Magic, along with a few other competitors in the same space, you know, trying to solve this problem. But it was very clear that Shopify seen a benefit in acquiring your solution versus others, and obviously are considering a roadmap of updates to the solution. And who knows, maybe at some point, maybe it'll be part of the core offering at some point. I know it's still listed as an app in the App Store. We'll talk a little later about a great offer that you and I have discussed about before we started recording. But you know, so that's really cool. Thank you so much for sharing that. And so let's talk about the actual building now, and kind of maybe some of the learnings of building Return Magic. And maybe, you know, let's start maybe from an entrepreneurship point of view first.
Yeah, great question. Again, I could go on for ages, so I'll try and keep this in a bullet point format.
Okay.
But if there is a couple things I want to call out, is really the importance of day zero. So even before you know what you're going to build, well, at least in our case, we laid out our values. We thought very deeply about the kind of business we wanted to build. And, you know, now, I guess, but also in the future. So we laid out our values. We had no employees, right? It was just me and my co-founder. It definitely was probably overkill. Mm-hmm. But that set the foundation, I think, in terms of the behavior. And then when we started hiring, we felt that the values and the mission was really held and carried by the employees as well.
Right.
The other component, I'd say, that, of like the importance of day zero is the founding stories. So if you've read From Zero to One by Peter Thiel, right, he touches briefly about these founding stories. And it comes down to what kind of business you want to build and why. I remember very clearly these late night conversations I had with my founder of what kind of business we wanted to do, what motivates us. You know, it's a very personal thing, you know, in terms of thinking what kind of business you want to build. Right. And honestly, it's been our North Star. Whenever, you know, down the line, a couple of years later, we had a difficult decision, we could always go back to that. We didn't know what was coming our way then. So we were being really true to who we were. And in a way, it was like the best expression of, you know, what's the best business we can build for ourselves.
Right.
So an example of this is we decided early on not to raise VC money. We preferred actually to just bootstrap and focus on revenue as the primary source of financing growth. Mm-hmm. That gave us a lot more flexibility in terms of iteration, in terms of making sure that when we raise, if we want to raise, we'll have a solid product with traction and so on. If I had summarized this, you know, these values, these founding stories, they're the foundation of the house, and you can't move those later down the line. So it's really important to be, very kind of deliberate in defining those.
Yeah, it's almost like the same as like an e-commerce store owner about, you know, creating a brand and a brand voice and really thinking about, what are you passionate about? How do you want to position yourself in the market in relation to others? And, you know, I think spending that time ahead of time and really proper documentation of your values and your mission statement and what you stand for, and what customers can expect from you. I think it's very notable that you've done that right from the beginning. And I implore anybody that's in entrepreneurship, likely if you're listening to this show, e-commerce is important to you. Either you're on your journey or you want to start your journey. Super important to have a proper mission statement and some kind of a vision and a brand voice that goes along with, you know, what it is that you are retailing to the world.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else about any learnings from an entrepreneurship perspective?
And it boils down really in the product, but it's that understanding that we might be building a software, but actually merchants are buying a solution.
Right.
So that's really key because, you know, as great as your code is, the merchant doesn't care, right? If you could solve their problem without using technology, they'd still probably give you a shot.
Right.
And from that point on, it became very clear that we were there to what we call make magic happen as our core value.
Right.
And really help merchants
win,
right? And by helping them win their buyers. We knew that if they felt good with how they were doing returns with buyers, they would come back to us. And it showed in so many other ways. We invested a lot in support, in making sure that the overall experience was great. And that's also, like, we had merchants tell us, look, the only reason I'm with you guys is because you listen to feedback and you iterate on it.
Right.
They didn't think our product was any better. They just saw where we were going, and our attitude spoke to them. So that's also, I think, one key learning. I didn't really understand the depth of that kind of approach. Mm-hmm. And it's been really important. Like I'm telling you, sometimes we've had merchants that were pissed off, right? I think any app developer will understand that, you know, you can't be perfect all the time. But it's fine. Everybody makes mistakes. It's the way you approach those mistakes. And a lot of the times, the most difficult moments for merchants is where we saw that opportunity to build a strong relationship with them. So I like to call this the judo method, where you take someone that's completely pissed off, that gave you a one-star rating, and you just respond with love, with kindness, in such a way that they actually end up becoming your biggest advocate. So that's been a great learning, and honestly, it's one of the biggest sources of satisfaction, if you like, that I've had personally throughout the journey.
Well, congrats on that. You know, I agree with you on the, you know, the know, like, and trust factor. I think, you know, when merchants kind of know you, they like you, and they trust you, and they feel that, you know, that you're willing to put in the energy and the time to be able to improve the product and to figure out the fact that they have a voice too, in kind of, because, you know, businesses have a lot of similarities in e-commerce, but there also are some interesting nuances, especially when you move into the plus realm of merchant. And it's great that you are able to kind of offer some core features, but then, you know, build a roadmap over time that really addressed some of the very interesting nuances that happened with the plus side. So that's really cool. So let's talk about the acquisition. I think it's important to share that and to understand. I'm not sure how much you can share as far as the roadmap or maybe the vision of the product. Can you kind of share some insights to the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, I just want to mention our mission and our product. You know, vision remain very much along the same lines as before, except now in a bigger and a bolder manner, which is really exciting. You know, we have the chance to be part of a large family, a great platform for us to do great things. And that's obviously exciting. And at the end of the day, that's also why we decided to join Shopify, because we felt we could do a lot more for merchants inside the building. Now, in terms of where we're going to take the product around returns, well, we're going to launch Shopify Returns, which is a native solution to Shopify.
Excellent.
Along with perhaps, it's going to probably going to be a few layers of product, to be honest. So I can't tell you too much now. Mm-hmm. I'll keep the suspense going, because this is kind of all under discussion right now. But we know that, you know, merchants have been crying for it, and we're excited to bring something to market as quickly as possible.
Fair enough.
And our goal, like I mentioned earlier, is really to help merchants build long-term relationships with their buyers and help them thrive in the world of hyper-convenience. That's really, really key, especially when you think about the role that Shopify is playing in the overall landscape. Right? If you look at large retailers, which I've mentioned earlier, they centralize resources and they really invest heavily in post-purchase. Now, independent merchants don't have the means to do that. So it really comes down to Shopify to centralize the resources and invest heavily on behalf of these independent merchants and really equip them. So that's kind of what we want to do. We're excited to have the chance to be in a position to do that. And maybe if I could summarize what I just said in a tagline, you know, if there is an arms race for convenience, we want to be the arms dealer.
Ah, okay. Well, it should now be obviously important to have kind of a solid return policy, like a process and a procedure. It's just part of almost the demands of the market now, you know, starting from the biggest players down. And so depending on where you are maturity-wise as a merchant in startup land or kind of emerging or adopting as you kind of work your way along, it's as you can tell, it's super important to have a great policy in place. It's important to have the right technology in place. Return Magic, in my opinion, has done a fantastic job. And I mentioned at the beginning that many merchants are using it and have been quite successful. I'm particularly happy with the landing page that is created as far as creating a great user experience. It's excellent just how the whole thing works. Do you have any kind of closing comments or any kind of takeaways that you may want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of what's free, specific, and actionable, I want to leave you with two suggestions, maybe. First of all, 4 out of 5 buyers will read your return policy. So if you want to start somewhere that's low-hanging fruit, make sure your policy is short and that a 7-year-old can read it in 30 seconds or less. Like literally the simpler, the easier, the more you're going to convert. To kind of flip this on its head, what you shouldn't do is write a policy that looks like a legal document. That just does not inspire trust. And we see so many merchants actually just, you know, writing this long, long list or long text. So I'd say start from there. It's always a good starting point. The second thing I'd say is don't be afraid to experiment with your return policy and your return experience, right? You're not bound to a specific workflow, especially if you leverage an app. So you can play around and see what happens if you change the return window, for example, from 30 to 60 days. Or what if you make your returns free, right? You could look at these as bets, as small bets, and really quickly understand how that impacts the buyer. We strongly encourage merchants to start with those two things. If you're looking for more resources, there is Plus website that has a bunch of information, the Return Magic website as well, around thinking more deeply around your return strategy.
So how can people learn more about the Return Magic app?
Yeah, sure. Feel free to visit our website, the Shopify App Store, the Plus BFCM Guide to Returns.
Well, Guillaume, thanks again for taking time out of your busy day and getting on this recording. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was really my pleasure, Steve. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. Take care. Well, that's it for this episode. A few important takeaways for today. You know, your customers are reading your return policy, so make it simple and straightforward to understand. And Guillaume said it best. Assume a 7-year-old is reading it and write it in a language that's transparent and fair. You know, and there's an ever-increasing expectation from buyers for merchants to have a seamless and pain-free return or exchange workflow in place. And that's why Return Magic has been created. Now, Shopify has a mantra, make commerce better for everyone. And it really does ring true here with Return Magic. You know, really by helping merchants like you really differentiate and innovate the buyer's experience within the returns process. Now, if you don't have a return solution in place, you should give Return Magic a try. It's free now for the next 3 months without any obligation. Just use the coupon code FASTLANE when you sign up and see for yourself how it can help your store. And before I end the show today, I'd like to thank you, my loyal listeners. It's my hope this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms, all with my personal goal to help you grow and scale with Shopify. Thanks for carving out some time today and listening to the show. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.